The Pacific Amphitheater is empty right now, but when bands like Tears for Fears and Culture Club fill it, K-Rock is here to bring you the best new music. K-Rock, the station that was first to bring you Duran Duran, Depeche Mode, and Wham, continues its commitment to bring you new music in Southern California.
K-R-O-Q!
Howdy, Sparks fans. Another brief intro for all you, this 38th episode of All You Ever Think About Is Sparks, the only and therefore best podcast solely devoted to the music of Ron and Russell Mayall. I do want to urge you all, if you haven't already, to check out Monty Mallon's new Sparks-themed YouTube show called Sparks, Entertainment and Art. He's up to 3 episodes now, and I was honored and delighted to be his guest for episode number 2. Meanwhile, Paul Barrett is still going strong with his show and channel called Metasparks, where he has new episodes up right now about the oft, and I would say unfairly, maligned 2000 album by Sparks, Balls. Go check that one out as well. This episode wraps up our crazy 4-parter on Angst in My Pants. Next up is going to be 1983's self-produced Lindrummy effort In Outer Space. That will be a lot of fun. Until next time, dance, goddammit. You can't really talk about New Wave era Sparks without mentioning one of their biggest benefactors in the 80s, KROQ 106.7 FM, the zeitgeist pushing, or is it predicting, Los Angeles rock radio station. Particularly throughout the first half of the decade of the 80s, K-Rock and its DJs enthusiastically promoted fellow Angelinos Sparks, and much of Sparks' success on the West Coast and beyond during that time can be attributed to K-Rock's effort to some degree. Those efforts also included a renegade music director who wanted the rest of America to have the same epiphany he did, that the new acts coming out of the punk and new wave scene were the future of pop music. K-Rock was birthed into existence in 1972 when country music station KBBQ, faced with sagging ratings, changed its format to top 40 rock and pop. Although the newly branded station enjoyed better success than before, K-Rock was cursed with poor money management. It got so bad that the director of Sly and the Family Stone had to step in to buy the station outright. Original program director Shadow Stevens left K-Rock in 1979, and the station replaced him with Rick Carroll. Carroll got his start in radio in Sacramento as a college intern, and he quickly worked his way up the ladder. By the time K-Rock hired Carroll to take over the direction of their still-struggling station, the punk and new wave scenes had gotten a good bit of traction in places like New York City and London. Throughout the rest of the United States, however, long-established mainstream rock acts were still dominating the airwaves, leaving little opportunity for new artists and new genres. As a fan of what was then known collectively as simply new music, Carroll lamented this trend and he sought to counter it with the new direction he had set out for K-Rock FM. Instead of eschewing the long-established top 40 format of programming songs for air, Carroll kept the format. He just changed the content. The vast majority of top 40 stations in the country were based on record sales. And in the late 70s, most of those sales went to either stadium rock acts or disco producers. As a punk and new wave fan, and with a Nostradamus-like knack at predicting future hits, Carroll handpicked the songs he liked and that he thought would catch on with K-Rock listeners. He developed what became known as the Hot Clock, a pie chart prescribing the music to be played during each portion of a disc jockey's air shift. His system also included a jock's choice at the end of each hour of programming, during which a DJ could play any song of his or her own choosing. He branded this new format simply the Rock of the 80s. Not long after K-Rock's new approach and new branding, newer music acts that up till then had only niche appeal or success exploded in popularity. The list of breakout artists to rise out of this campaign reads as almost obvious today, but modern household names like The Cure, Depeche Mode, The Clash, Ramones, Talking Heads, Blondie, and of course, local boys Sparks, and dozens more, at least in part, owe their success in the U.S. to Rick Carroll and his anti-AOR, pro-little guy strategy. These outsider acts first caught on in Los Angeles, and then, once Rick Carroll started working as a consultant for other radio stations, it happened in San Diego, in Seattle, Boston, Philadelphia, Cleveland, and cities all over the U.S. As many Angelinos who were there at the time will tell you, K-Rock throughout the 80s was more than just a radio station. It was an attitude, an identity, even a lifestyle. It was one of those increasingly rare times in the corporate world where being weird, being an underdog, became a selling point. Maybe the selling point. By the end of the decade, so-called alternative music was barely alternative anymore at all, judging by the sales of records and concert tickets. As former K-Rock DJ Max Tolkoff, aka Mad Max, put it in 2015, "If you were into this music, you also generally lived a somewhat different lifestyle. Although, it was soon discovered, fans of the new format came in all shapes and sizes and tastes. It wasn't just college kids, it was kids in high school, as well as Gen Xers just hitting the workforce and corporate types in shirts and ties." Sadly, although K-Rock survived the entirety of the 80s, Rick Carroll did not. He succumbed to AIDS-related pneumonia in 1989. He was posthumously inducted into the Rock Radio Hall of Fame in 2014. K-Rock maintained its relevance as the 80s gave way to the 90s and helped turn a new generation of alternative acts into the wildly successful subgenre, actually called, pretty ironically, I'd add, alternative. The radio station exists to this day, though most longtime listeners will always point to the rock of the 80s era as a truly transformational moment in popular music history. The second one is Instant Weight Loss.
Yeah.
This one is obviously not as anthemic, doesn't have that anthemic quality that so many of the others songs on the album have. I noticed that most of it sticks with this. Well, of course, you've got Bob Hogg's kind of stuttering, insistent riff, which I found out is he's playing a G5 power chord there, and it's there for like most of it. So not a lot of musicality on that side of things. Ron does do some fun stuff with his keyboard stylings going up and down. Do you have anything in particular? Do you have any thoughts about instant weight loss? I didn't have a lot.
Not particularly. When I was saying last show, and I kind of hinted at this show, that the reason I've kind of gravitated toward Womp a little bit over this album is only because on Womp, from beginning to end, I love every song. And I said that I don't think that's a great criteria necessarily, but it's my criteria. And on this song, this album, I guess, you know, every song until now has been so good. And then I felt that this one and the next one weren't quite up to the same standard. And I don't want to say that because they're good songs.
No, but you and me are on the same page here.
Okay. Yeah. But I have to say the words on this one are wonderful.
Yeah.
The words are really funny.
Speaking of the words, I was trying to figure out what it means. I mean, obviously he's having sex with the woman and he loses all this weight and whatever. What's your interpretation of what's going on here lyrically?
isn't that enough? I mean, it's a funny song. I mean, I will say this, if Saccharin in the War was his first song about dieting and this is his second song, at least this one's understandable. I have no idea what that song, Saccharin in the War, or Roger, are really about.
I have no clue.
But I know they're about diet.
Those first two albums, man. Yeah.
Oh, they're on another. We're going to have a conversation about
that. They are on another planet. Yeah.
The words are funny. It's just a funny little story. And maybe it's because we expect so much out of them sometimes, you know. But I have no problem with the song. It's just, it's not one of my go-to songs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It kind of sounds to me like something they thought maybe they had something when they were jamming and maybe this could become something. And Ron had something of an idea and there you go.
But the words, though, I mean, they're funny.
They're funny.
Really well put together words. Yeah.
What do you think's going on in the second verse with this guy with the
foreign accent? Name, the chubby hands.
The chubby hands and the gold chains. Yeah.
I don't know.
Is he a pimp of some kind? Is this some sort of a larger scam whereby this guy has hired these lovely young ladies to get this guy to lose weight? And then the foreign guy with the chains comes around and tempts him with more goodies. So he puts the weight back on. So his repeat business.
I didn't hear any of that.
Yeah.
But that doesn't mean it's not there. I just heard that he did what he had to do. He lost the weight to get the girl. And then came this guy with the big chains and, you know, and the foreign accent and all that stuff. And he lost the girl.
Yeah.
And I don't know, maybe I'm superficial, but I just heard it as a really funny little song, you know? I didn't hear all those things that you heard. Maybe they're there. Maybe they're there.
Maybe they are there. It's, you know, as I said before, musically, it's pretty simplistic. I mean, you got Bob Hogg, you know, playing that G5 over and over and over and over. And then there's a little bit of a change here. One night, one steamy night. I think there's a play on a E to an E minor and an E, and it just goes right back to it.
Yeah.
After that.
It's a good song.
Yeah, I mean,
it's a good song. It's fun.
It does
smile to your face.
Break up.
Yeah.
From the beginning of the album up to this point, it's felt like a raging party nonstop. And then this breaks up the momentum a bit.
Yep, absolutely.
Yeah. Which is a good thing for any party. Do you have anything? I'm going to go ahead and read the lyrics unless there's something else you want to add about it.
Nah, go ahead.
All right, here we go. We got, don't play that riff, which is kind of funny. You got Bob Hogg there.
Playing the riff.
Russ is saying, don't play that riff. Don't play that riff. That takes me back. Instant weight loss. There was this girl, black hair, so what? She called me fats. But in one night, instant weight loss. One night, one steamy night, I'd lose a kilo each hour. And 10 nights, 10 steamy nights, and figure a kilo an hour. Instant weight loss. Pardon me while I scroll. Then, I think I missed something here. Oh, then came this guy. Some foreign name, had chubby hands. Wore lots of chains. Instant weight loss. That's it. What's done is done. Erase the past if you can. With ice cream, with coconut pie. In less than a week, I'd undone instant weight loss. So there it is. So he just put it all back again. Don't play that riff. Sings Russ again. She sang that riff. All through the night, it's coming back. I've gained an ounce. I've gained a pound. Another pound. I've gained a tum. Pump. Pump, pump, pump. So last July, this girl pulls up, blonde hair. So what? She says, hey, fats. Instant weight loss. Instant weight loss. Instant weight loss. Instant weight loss. It goes on, goes on. I believe it just goes out that way.
Yeah. You know, what's wrong with just a funny little song?
I know.
You know, it's a cute, funny little song. It's Ron writing for humor. And
yeah,
it's good.
Yeah, yeah. you know, I mean, maybe you could dig a little deeper and, you know, the whole the weight loss craze, the fitness craze of the early 80s. People are jogging now, wearing their Walkman. And
that's exactly what I was going to say. I mean, that would be, if it's a comment on anything, that's what it's a comment on. You know, that's how things were at that time. So, okay. It's a funny little comment.
Yeah. Yeah. There's your second level.
I do fear with the whole, I don't want to, I'm going to use the word meta, but I'm not trying to single anybody out, I promise. But I do fear with that cottage industry that sometimes it's okay to just listen to the songs and appreciate them for what they have to say.
Sure.
Because they're just funny songs or they just have a point, you know. And I think that's what you get on a lot of these older albums. Just, yeah. They were funny guys.
Yeah. Yeah.
And here they were going for humor throughout the whole 80s. They wanted to be those funny guys until music that you can dance to, when they started to change their tune a little bit, which is a bad pun. But
interesting. You know,
they were just interested in selling records and having fun and being part of the LA scene and being funny, kind of the, you know, little clownish. They were okay with it.
Yeah. I can't wait until we get to that album there. Because you kind of see that as the point where they started to look a little more inward?
I think with that album, yeah. But I think a lot of – we'll come to all that. But yeah, I think a lot of it got put on hold. But I think even with the next album, it presaged a lot of what we see now, which I don't think I could have appreciated until looking at it now and thinking about where they are now and how – So much of what they do now is kind of captured in Outer Space. You don't get it from the songs necessarily, but you get it from the presentation and the production. But I know we're saving that discussion. But yeah, I think that next album has more. It means more to me now than it did then. That's for sure.
I can't wait to get to that. And also at this, you know, they're still cranking out an album a year. You know, they're
seven albums in this decade.
Seven albums.
One in the next decade.
Yeah.
Seven albums. If you include Terminal Jive.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Yeah. But you're right. I know. It's. So, you know, they've got a work ethic here also, where they want to get the material out.
They love to work and they love to tour.
That's it. Yep. Right.
Yep.
Okay, so I think you and I might both agree to an extent here. The next song feels to me as sort of being in this, what do I want to call it? I don't want to call it a lull, but it's a change in tempo, I suppose. Tarzan and Jane.
Well, I think you made a great point that with the first set of songs through Mustache. It's just, it's like a bulldozer, just one after another, these big songs. And here you get a little bit more diversity in the last four albums of last four songs of the album, right? I mean, you have Instant Weight Loss, then you've Tarzan and Jane, and then the next two are also, I would say, not in that anthemic mode either, you know?
Right.
So they were a little bit more experimental with them. And on this one, it just doesn't work for me, and it never has. Mm. I mean, because I don't know what they're really singing about. I still don't quite get it. I mean, the lyrics are funny.
You're of no help at all, Monty, because I had nothing.
Yeah. It's like, why is there a riot in room 42 or whatever it is? I don't know. It's just like, it's, I don't know. I don't get much from it.
Yeah.
Maybe it's me.
So just on the surface, musically, I think that maybe, I suspect they had a groove. They came up with a groove and they wanted to follow that groove and see what they could build on it. And, you know, I can see that. I mean, you know, there's something there that maybe you can get into. It definitely doesn't have the driving rhythm, that anthemic quality, like you said, the songs that we've already talked about. It sounds a little primitive, maybe. There's just sort of a dirtle, dirtle, gunk, gunk, gunk. Which, hey, could be Tarzan. This is another song where the last song, I took a look at this. The last song mostly is in G, and you're just hitting that G over and over and over again. This song does that too. In fact, you've got Bob Hogg hitting the same power chord. He's hitting G5 over and over and over again. Bar, 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 bar. And so most of the melody that you hear is coming from Russ, or it may come from Ron's keyboard, or, you know, or that. But the main thrust is kind of, I don't want to say that it's monotone, but it is more monotone.
Yeah, I think maybe sometimes my standard, I just expect so much out of them every time out that, I mean, maybe if I just heard the song, I would think it was cute or something like that. But it doesn't work for me.
Are we looking for some kind of permission structure to say that we don't really like the song very much?
I can say it. I don't care for this song.
I don't like the song very much.
Yeah. Yeah. God bless those who do. I've gotten older, I've gotten away from saying this song sucks, this song's great. You know, saying this is great, you know, is one thing, but saying this song sucks, I don't do that anymore. I try really not to, but this is my opinion. It does. All I can say is, for me, I don't like the song very much.
This takes place in a school. I think it's a high school.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's a riot in room 42. It's chemistry, and now it's a zoo. Da 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 da. You know, and you've got the teachers are turning into Tarzan and Jane. All the students are turning into Tarzan and Jane. I guess if you want to go there, maybe it's making Ronald think about one of his first inspirations, which is the Blackboard Jungle, the movie. Maybe. They're all becoming cavemen and whatever. Kids today. Who knows?
I don't have much more for you.
I know. There's not a lot to traverse here.
To be honest with you, I've always thought of it as kind of filler.
Yep.
Hate to say it, but that's my opinion.
Yep. Okay, fair enough.
I wonder if we'll get pushback.
I always do.
Yeah.
Well,
it wouldn't be a very fun world if everybody agreed with each other.
I agree.
As long as people are civil.
Totally. Yeah. Would you care to read the lyrics?
Yeah. Sure. I'll be thrilled to read
your least favorite song on the album.
There's a riot in room 42. It was chemistry. Now it's a zoo. And they kicked out the teacher, Miss Perune, turned the heat up to 102. Tarzan and Jane. Now they're ripping their shirts and their tights. Look at them swinging from fluorescent lights. Look at Bob. He was getting straight A's. Who's he carrying round on his face? Tarzan and Jane. Now they've called in the men wearing blue. There's a cameraman from Channel 2. On the news at 11, does Edgar Rice Burroughs get royalty on local news? Well, tomorrow at 7:04, and the principal says, shut the door. There's a chimp from Zoology 4. Tarzan and Jane. All right.
There it is. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Fair enough. Hey, you got to make an LP.
You got to make an LP, yeah.
All right, so next we've got the penultimate song, "The Decline and Fall of Me." This is a fun song. I like any song of theirs that marries kind of fun music to nominally depressing lyrics.
Right, that seems to be something they do.
Yeah, well, I guess you're right. That sparks, right? sounds like it's a guy in an advanced stage of dementia, right? You know, I'm hearing all this when I read through some of the lyrics. Oh, what is it? Oh, I'm not looking at it now, but other than that, I'm the same or something like that. Like I was then, I suppose.
I always thought this was just a funny song, but now you've completely depressed me.
Oh no, really?
Completely. Now I realize I'm laughing at somebody with the later stage of dementia. I never knew I was doing that.
Yeah,
I'm really down now.
I'm sorry to hear that. Sparks can do that. They can take you up or down, depending on how you read it.
That's for sure.
And I read that, and I read those little bits like, you know, despite all this horrible stuff, I'm fine. Kind of like a. Aside from that, Mrs. Lincoln, how was the play? Not the song, mind you.
Right.
But just the attitude.
I will say that with this song and the next one, I think they're both great. I think they got their mojo back. They were smart. I know that people will not agree with me on this. They were smart to kind of bury Instant Waste Loss and Tarzan and Jane in particular, because they start out strong. They got those two. Kind of like complaints in my family a little bit. And then they hit you with these last two, which are just so good. I think both of them are great songs. So yeah, I've always found this hilarious. And what I've always loved about it was that reference to Goodbye, Mrs. Mail, that they say it twice. First of all, the fact that they reference themselves that specifically, something they never do. Second, that they say it twice because there's two of them. I always found that a funny little twist to the
Two males. Thank you.
Yeah, I always thought that was a funny little twist, you know.
I thought so.
Love the song. Yeah.
This is about someone falling apart, breaking down in some way to me, as you know, as I said. Oh gosh, I don't have a whole thing to go into there. But there's Ron's keyboard does some cool stuff here.
Yeah.
Do-do-do-do-do. Boy, it sounds like it's almost celebratory. But then it gets, you know, wistful or melancholy, you know, a little bit there too.
Yeah. I will. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, please.
I was going to say, here is where I think there's some wonderful work from our friend David Kendrick. Who's almost like a hidden character on our show. It seems we refer to him so much.
Yeah.
But he inverts the beat. And so I maybe it's because of the lyrics, maybe it's because of the music. I don't know, but you know, that we expect that it's not a, it's like almost the sound is on the one and the three, but not quite, you know, it's more like shoot. It's hard to explain, but when we play it, you'll hear it and people can hear what I'm trying to get at. But it's an inversion a little bit of a traditional beat, which wouldn't be a big deal on other Sparks albums. But since this one and his predecessor and the next one really relied on fairly traditional beats, it really stands out. And I think it's a wonderful contribution to the song.
You're absolutely right. I don't know if he I said as much to you in your interview with him. I think he mentioned it to me when I had a chance to speak with him for the same reason. You know, the drum work on this song is really interesting and just not what you would expect. So the inverted rhythms is really cool. And, you know, lyrically, thematically kind of cool. Things are wrong. Things aren't working quite right.
Yeah, it's wonderful. Yeah.
Yeah, I think so too.
I remember him saying somewhere or other that for these albums they got to write their own drum parts. Their own parts. The whole band did. They got to write their own parts.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Kendrick said that somewhere or other. Oh, I can dig it up for you, but
that's cool as hell. I wonder if anyone else got that freedom later on. Interesting. Let's see. Lyrically, there's this. I don't know. It probably means nothing. But there's a Ron puts in an "If I Had a Hammer" reference.
Yeah.
Maybe it's just there, so because people, you know, might. I don't know. What did I see? Bob gets a chance to do another solo in the middle. This is probably the best solo he does on the album. The biggest spotlight he has on his playing, I think. All that business. And he doesn't get a chance to do that very much. So good on him.
He doesn't.
Russell, a lot of this album has Russell in that new register that he's been doing where it's a little lower pitched. And he does some more vocal leaps in this song that he doesn't do a whole lot of elsewhere on this album, which is kind of neat to hear. Where it's my mouth, man, this eating is rough on the shirt. Yeah. I can't hit that note. Shirts, you know, and so on, which is just always cool to hear if you miss some old school Russell, you know, vocal gymnastics.
Yeah, Russell's in fine form on this whole album. You know, good stuff.
I also noticed that.
Yeah, go on. No, I was just talk about the lyrics a little bit because they are very funny lyrics. But yeah, I know you'll go over them in a minute. So,
Just one more thing, and it's about the lyrics. As opposed to, I predict at the end, Russell is singing, "I'm fading away," and the song actually does fade out this time.
It fades out, right?
Yeah.
So
thanks for making good on that.
Yeah, that time he did, didn't he? Yeah.
That's all I've got.
I was going to say chart positions bubbling under drowning and goodbye future Mrs. Mail. Mail.
Mail.
That's been one of my favorite lyrics.
Me too.
Yeah. Good stuff.
Who is it? Am I up to bat here?
You are.
On the lyrics. Let's see here. All right. And this is a lot of fun. This could have worked as the final song on the album. It could have worked just fine. But it's such a fun sonic surprise to know that it's not when we get to the next one. let's see. Here we are. Here it is. Now I stutter. Now I dribble. Other than that, I'm lots like I was then. The decline and fall of me. I just shaved my nose off. Oh, well, other than that, I'm lots like I was then. The decline and fall of me. If I had a hammer, I would drop it and break it. Look at the pieces. Now I've got a hobby. I collect frozen pizzas. Check out my pizzas. Da, 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 da. Now your jokes seem really funny. Other than that, I'm lots like I was then. Ooh, the decline and fall of me. Where's my mouth, man? This eating is rough on the shirts. Shirts. Gee, I'm sorry about the thermometer, nurse. Would you tell me again which are girls, which are guys? Gee, I thought that this finger meant so long goodbye. Is someone flashing him the middle finger there? I wonder what's happening there.
I think he's giving it to somebody. I thought I was saying goodbye.
Chart position bubbling under drowning and goodbye future Mrs. Mail. Ooh, the decline and fall, decline and fall of me. And then I'm fading away, and I'm fading away, I'm fading away, I'm fading away, and they fade away.
They do.
And they do.
Terrific song.
A lot of fun. And David again, he's running the show, man. Neither one of us can say enough good about what David's doing here.
Well, Mac was a rock producer, right? About. And I'm sure he wanted different drums than on Terminal Jive. And so having the band to work with, even though he was part of Giorgio's team and all that, having the band to work with and really being able to get the songs and the drums the way he wanted for a real rock band, I bet he loved it. And then getting to work with a talent like David Kendrick, who could just do whatever, who could come up with these things. That must have been great.
Glad you mentioned Mac, because I know I mentioned Mac last time we talked, and I talked about the Queen connection, because he was producing a Queen record at the same time he was producing this record, or more or less. And when you go back and you listen to those two Queen records from that same time, a lot of the drum sounds do sound similar from Roger Taylor. And so, I think, obviously David's his own incredible beast, but it does sound like Mac, has a specific sound that he wants to get from these rock drums.
Yeah.
On the track. And it's, you can definitely hear it there.
Yeah. I think, I remember reading, I think it was in the Isley book, that at the beginning of these sessions, they would see Marauder occasionally. He would come in to see how it was done. But I think it was Kendrick or someone who said he didn't see a lot of intellectual capacity there, meaning that all Marauder wanted to do was get it done, and he had his way of doing things. Mm-hmm. And he really enjoyed working with Mac because Mac understood the band and knew how to get that great band sound from them. And I think that was very wise of them, or however it worked out. They were probably just given Mac and said, get out of our hair. But somehow it seemed to be a good collaboration, even if, the mastering isn't perfect, the production isn't perfect. But overall, I think it's a very strong collaboration.
I want to pause right there because this is something that I think we've talked about before. I don't know to what degree.
We did.
Okay. Well, then I don't want to repeat myself. But if ever there are two Sparks albums to be remastered, for me, it would be Womp and Angst in My Pants.
Yeah.
There's just the mix is not quite, not mix in the sense that some elements are raised above or below others, but there's a clarity that I think is just not quite there, and it's not quite doing justice to all of the musicians there.
Yeah, I think it's a little improved on this album over the last one.
Yeah.
But in my mind, I agree with you. I'd love to hear these albums redone. If I were a big fan of Pulling Rabbits, I would say 10 times I would love to see that one done, or just from beginning to end, production-wise. Yeah. But on these two, these would be the place to start. I just feel, and I know I don't want to repeat myself, but I just feel like these albums were just made to be played live.
Totally. So
everything was big.
Totally.
Because they hadn't toured forever, until they got this band together and went to France or whatever they did.
Yeah.
I think they just wanted to put out music that they could get, music that you can play to.
Music that you can play to. Yep. Perfect.
That's what I hear when I hear them and I hear the production.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And so that's the penultimate song. And then we wrap up the whole album with this monster of a closing track, Eaten by the Monster of Love. Which I mentioned actually was released as a single by Atlantic in the U.S. Mickey Mouse on the B-side didn't chart, of course. It was in the movie Valley Girl. I mentioned that. You go.
Well, one thing that was really interesting is that at the beginning of this last tour, they played this song for the first few shows. And then they cut the set list by a couple songs because I guess it was a little much. And I really would have loved to have heard it, now, just kind of the way you hear Angst in My Pants has held up so well for them. And some of the others from those older days. I wish I could have gotten to hear this one then too, because this one is a lot. This one is just a really fun song, and it would work live wonderfully. And I'm a big fan of this song and always have been.
Yeah, me too. Can you just imagine? I mean, we talked about those two songs in the middle of side two that are kind of a they're a lull in some ways. Can you imagine if this were like an EP, you know, and you just had five or six songs and Eaten by the Monster of Love is the last one? It would just, golly, it would be this anthemic roar through the whole thing. This is another one of those.
It's really anthems. Just two songs. I mean, just you can't have an EP with eight songs, and there's no other one that I would cut. I mean, it's that good. I don't know.
That's true.
I think I'd rather just have it as it is and live with those two songs.
This one hits really hard, and I can't help but think that there's some autobiographical stuff going on in here with the lyrics.
Maybe the other thing that I hear is that it's a positive song. It's a fun, positive song, and that's kind of fun. You don't get that too often with Sparks, just straight out positivity.
Yeah.
And this one is just, I'm eaten by the monster of love, and he didn't resist too hard.
So you're reading it as being eaten by the monster of love is a good thing.
I think that's what I hear. Yeah, I get it. I think this has to do with how the music presents it. Because if it was done in minor keys and all that kind of stuff, maybe I'd have a different view. But it's done in such a poppy, peppy way.
Well, that's true. But they do that dichotomy a lot, too.
They do. But it's not like, oh, it's sunny today. Or, gee, that was fun. You know what I mean? It's not like that, where it's the least fun song ever. And yeah, you know, this is just a happy, where they have the happy lyrics and the sad music. Here they have the happy music, and the lyrics, in my mind, always seemed like he was happy about it. But I can see how you can see the difference. You know, you can have a different view.
If it were, of course, the reason why I want to say that there may be an autobiographical element to it is because, well, of course, no one really knows, you know, much about Ron and Russell's personal lives, their love lives or whatever, but we know that they're unmarried, and I could imagine that one of their priorities, one of their stated priorities at an early point in getting started was, we're not going to let ourselves be distracted by love, by women, by marriage or anything like that. Am I getting too
meta? It could be, but I get the impression that they, if I would guess that they went that route, perhaps they didn't consciously decide to go that route. They were just so focused on what they were doing career-wise, and it just consumed them.
Yeah.
Before you knew it, they were 75 years old and still doing it. But they dated. I mean, Russell certainly did. I don't know anything about Ron at all, but I mean, they dated, you know? So I think they did during this period, at least they tried to have some kind of social life.
My father said
before, I know as little about them personally now as I did 50 years ago.
I'm probably not going to glean much more in the next.
Yeah, I haven't learned a thing. Years or whatever. Yeah. But
my
anyway,
I look at
the lyrics. I totally get what you're saying, you know, but nonetheless, I just think the beauty of the song and the joy of the song almost overwhelms that and makes me think maybe they're just being a little sardonic. I don't know.
It could be. It very well could be. I mean, either way, it's a great song, you know, and also, you know, even if they're just being sort of, I don't know, surface level. Hey, you know, hey boy, you know, look out for them women folk out there. I mean, it's an old trope from, old, you know, from like an older male figure to a younger one. It's, you know, it works. It's not unusual.
Here's a weird maybe parallel.
Yeah.
Collaborations don't work.
Okay.
because they were in the middle of collaborating, and they were were doing a they were testing the waters to see if they could do a collaboration, and they came up with a funny song about how collaborations don't work when it worked wonderfully.
I wonder if someone was being eaten by the monster of love.
That during, we'll have to ask Alex, I guess, about that.
You're probably right.
Anyway,
it's fun, of course, right? It's joyous. It's a sing-along piece. I took out my acoustic guitar.
It's a sing-along piece. Yes.
It is, right? If any one song from this album could be something you could bust out an acoustic guitar and play around a campfire, this is the one. I know because I tried it. And it comes out so easily. And it's a group of chords in A major that flow together well, and it just feels happy.
Yeah. Yeah. And some nice little rolls from David put in there.
Always.
Yep. Yep.
But I noticed listening again less. His bass is a lot of fun in this one. Go back and listen to the bass if you haven't paid attention. He's going up and down, and it's very bouncy. He's having a lot of fun on this one. It's fun. It's seductive in its way. It's awesome. Ron is doing his keyboard is sort of set to kind of a carnival organ sounding patch again, which also makes it, you know, kind of just celebratory.
Yep.
And it's great. What a great way to end a fun album with
that's a way to end the album.
Fun piece.
Yep.
There you go. And I think that's all I have for that. Do you care to do the honors?
Sure. Don't let it get me. Let me get me, etc. Now, that's not what I hear in the song, but that's actually what's written on the lyric sheet. Don't let it get me. Don't let it get me, etc. So I've never seen that before. So, it's Saturday night and I'm still free and I ain't never going to be eaten by the monster of love. It's hard to fight it off much more. I hear it drooling by the door, eaten by the monster of love. It ain't a pretty sight to see the way it leaves them. It chews them up and spits out creatures with those goo-gooey eyes, sick, sickly smiles. It just ain't right. And my father said, don't worry, son. How can you not want to just start singing when you're going over these lyrics? It's like you can't say it without singing. And my father said, don't worry, son, but look at him. He should have run, eaten by the monster of love. I can't even get through this. This is so funny. Yes. Well, it's worse than war. It's worse than death. There ain't too many left who ain't been eaten by the monster of love. My favorite verse, buy a dog and that might help. Sometimes, though, a dog gets grabbed and eaten by the monster of love. Eaten by the monster of love. Let it huff, let it puff. Eaten by the monster of love. I hate to gripe, but I just ain't that type. And then it says, don't let it get me, don't let it get me, etc. again.
Yeah.
I know some really good, good people overcome and piece by piece, they were eaten by the monster of love. Sometimes it takes a nip at me, but I'm too quick to ever be eaten by the monster of love.
Don't let it get me. Sit down.
Voila.
Voila.
Oh my goodness.
And there it is. And then we've wrapped up two albums where we've got the Bates Motel folks, Gleaming Spires folks, really just pushing everything up to a whole other level. And it's great live, like you said. It's so much fun.
It took us 5 podcasts to get through those 2 albums, but it was worth it. It's worth it. Yeah. We should get Les and David on together because they re-released these about 10, the Gleaming Spire stuff, 10, 15 years ago.
Yep.
They released it, and that'll be fun to talk about with David.
So I think there were CD remasters that just happened like 2 years ago.
Even better.
Yeah. I mentioned to you, I was talking with our friend Pody, and she is going, I don't know if she's in Chicago or she's going to Chicago or what. I'm not sure. But yeah, she's going to go have a chance to see David, and she thinks that we might be able to get a chance to speak to with Les. They've been hanging out a lot lately, but I think he's going to be hanging out with Bob Hogg over there as well. I would love to have Bob Hogg on the show. I would love to talk to those guys about all the Gleaming Spires stuff. Frankly, I'd love to do, you know, one show about Gleaming Spires.
Yeah, yeah. Well, if Bob Hogg was available, of course we'd have him too. Yeah. My impression was that he had kind of moved out of the scene a little bit.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But yeah, Pody indicated maybe she can help with all that.
That would be killer. It would be a great way to
I'll probably get emails from her now. I didn't say that.
So I'll get them too. It'd be a great way to wrap up this era. You know, because I guess nominally on the liner notes and whatnot on the next record, they're all still there.
But
of course, they're not really audible because mostly what you have at that point is you got Ron and Russ, you got a Lindrum, and then you've got some, you know, synths, and that's the direction that they would kind of take for a few years after that. So this is this is the apex of this moment.
Yeah. Well, at some point, let's go back and get them. That'll be great.
Yeah, I would love that. I would love that so much. Well, cool. Hey, I'm sorry it's been so long, but I'm so glad that we got a chance to get together and wrap up one of our favorite albums.
This has been so much fun. Yeah. So much fun. Yeah.
Me too, man.
And like I said earlier, it's a great, you know, transitioning to the next album. My perspective on it has really changed. That'll be fun too. But these two albums are just in, you know, they have a habit of doing two albums in a similar style and then doing something different.
Yeah.
And they just kept to that here. You know, they did these two albums and then they transitioned to something different. I guess, you know, they're very restless. And these two albums have withstood withstood time in my mind without question.
Totally. Totally. Yeah. Totally agree. And if ever they get remastered, you know, I'm sure I will be even happier for that. Well, that's cool. Well, let's chat again real soon, man. I don't want another 3 months or however long it's been, past before we get to the next chapter. And I know you're doing a lot of stuff now as well.
I'm always busy though. So I'm always busy and I love doing lots of stuff. So I'm ready when you're ready. And, you know, we actually had someone who asked us, you know, when's the next part coming out?
And, get out.
of this, and we didn't have the nerve to tell him, oh, we haven't recorded it yet. So now we have.
Good. Awesome, man. All right. Awesome. Well, I've enjoyed this so much, as always, Monty.
Definitely.
And, I'll be catching up with you real soon.
Absolutely. Thank you. And right back at you.
You got it. Have a good one.
Ah oui, parfaitement.
Parfaitement.
Et Foucault, quand est-ce que vous apprendrez?
Eh bien, je vais m'y mettre.
Ah bon.
Merci.
C'est dommage que personne
n'a pas demandé les questions à nous avant parce qu'on savait toutes les réponses.
Eh oui, je m'en doute un peu. Oui. Voilà. Alors voici la question. Une flamberge est une épée, une danse ou un drapeau?
Et les Sparks, première chanson, voici les Sparks, élégant, Modesty Blaze.
Modesty Blaze, Modesty
talk about a manicure, but she can sure get things done.